So, welcome. This is Noreen Sumter. It's Tuesday night, and it is my favorite time of the week. Why? Because I get to be with you. I get to be with people, who, ordinary people who are living extraordinary lives. And why do I say that? We're living extraordinary lives because we're doing what we're passionate about, what we care about. And I think it's important that we do what we enjoy doing and do what we like doing and what moves our soul and our hearts. And so, like I always say, Tuesday night is my favorite time of the week because I get to be with you and I get to ask questions and I get to have wonderful guests online who are here for us to learn about, to share about, and to sort of like, if we're looking to get into that industry or take a stand for ourselves, these people are fine examples of people that have made a life around doing what's important to them. And many of these people that I have on my show, they are people that are service providers, right? Or when I say service providers, I mean they serve in the planet. They like make a difference in the planet. So a little bit about me for the, you know, what have I been up to? So I've been taking a course at Landmark. It's Landmark Education, and I've been doing this. It's so funny because the course that I'm taking, it's called Being Extraordinary, right? And so it's like, who says you're being extraordinary? You know, you don't wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to be extraordinary. Nobody does that. But what happens is what you do, who you be, informs people, and people say that you're extraordinary. Right? 9 times out of 10, we're all ordinary people living ordinary lives. But like, there are things that move us and move our souls for us to take action. And so tonight, see, if I don't get, like my usual is, if I don't get your name wrong, we're not going to have a good show. So Pei Sue is here. She's from England. She is the founder and CEO of ACT Asia. And when I was talking to her, I wanted to know why ACT. And it's, what is it, the art, compassion? No, the
action.
Action, compassion.
Together.
Togetherness, right? Yes. I know that in the early days of the AIDS virus, we had ACT UP. And it was like, I guess it was action. People were coming together to make, to do action. Yeah. So what you have is action, compassion, and togetherness. Yeah. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All the way from England. Yes. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Noreen, to have me on the show. And it's a great pleasure to be able to be here.
Right.
Yes.
So we're just going to have like a little chat and, you know, talk about, you know, weave in what you do, why you do it, what called you to do it, to do what you do. But I think, what was his name? David, right? Was it David?
Daniel.
Daniel. I knew it was a D. Yeah. Daniel. Daniel had, we had met at an event, was it last year?
Yes. Yes.
God, time is so flying.
Yes.
So we met at this event last year where we were, it was an event for Andrew Young, who is the Asian American person that is running for president of the United States.
Yes.
And I found him to be extremely captivating, very smart, you know, a decent fella. And why not have an Asian person become an American president? You know, I think it's definitely possible. Everything's falling to pieces today. So, yeah, we met there and we talked a little bit and kind of hit it off. And then Daniel called me and said that he'd love to have you on the show. So, So tell me a little bit about yourself. You live in England. You're married. You have a daughter. And you weren't raised in England, you said. You were raised in?
I was born in Taiwan, raised in Taiwan. I started to be a charity worker for non-profit in Taiwan.
And is that what you went to school for?
No, I studied business in Taiwan. And I used to do trading business. But more in my work journey, I work and I found I'm very passionate about a social issue. I started to be a volunteer for different type of organization. And then I realized most of my pay job, when I go there, I was doing the unpaid job.
Right.
So I decided to work full-time for the non-profit.
Uh-huh.
And then I worked 5 years. I got totally burnt out.
Right, because you were probably given everything.
Yes. And also, I think at the time, as a woman, at, you know, with no background in the social movement or social change movement, it's very tough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you give everything and you get very frustrated. Mm-hmm. And you got very,
I can relate.
You kind of question yourself. And then I felt, how did people do it in the West?
Right.
And I was so, you know, kind of curious, and mm-hmm. I want to become better.
Mm-hmm.
So I left Taiwan to travel to, I was intern in America for several months.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a different non-profit organizations mm-hmm. at the time.
And what did you discover after working with the non-profit organizations?
I think I used 1 year to work with different type of organizations in Europe and also in US, United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say the professionalism
uh-huh.
of these different type of charities
right.
is phenomenal.
Okay.
You know, and also I think the charity, you know, the whole society is accepted charities,
right.
except the non-profit. They've been seen as very positive force
mm-hmm.
within the country.
And what was it like in Taiwan?
In Taiwan at that time, it's still very early stage
right.
of foundations of, you know, the kind of third party
right.
force to help the society become better.
Right.
So I think the acceptance, you know, if we look at the social change, if you look at the non-profit, their force
mm-hmm.
and their acceptance in the country and here is very different at
right.
the time. So I think no wonder I feel very struggling at the time because people think, what are you doing? Why are you not doing a paid job? Why are you changing your paid job to be like a job never heard of? And also,
you're so English.
And also at the start at the time, I was, you know, I started from I was very concerned about human rights, the women's rights movement,
mm-hmm.
the prisoners' welfare,
mm-hmm.
the young defenders, mm-hmm. their welfare issues. And then I moved to environmental issues. And then when I become a full-time staff, I actually work on animal protection.
Right.
And especially promote animal welfare.
Right.
And I remember my family or my close friend was like, what? Animal welfare
what
again?
What are you doing?
Exactly. What does it mean, welfare for animals? They just never heard of.
Right.
So I think with all these is kind of you burn out very quickly because
right.
you have to self-taught, you have to self-learn, you have to be really thick-skinned
right.
to do, you know, to talk to media. I never had media training at the
right,
time.
Right, right.
So to be really brave to knock the door, say, hey, we have a press release. You feel like very intimidating
right, right.
at the time as well. And that's why I left Taiwan.
So now, my experience and my observation, I'm not saying it's the truth, but my experience and observation of animal welfare in the East, in Asia, right, doesn't appear to be a thing of existence.
Yes.
Because everything ends up on the table.
Yes, yes.
Right?
I think that's part of it is very true. I think that's come back to I've been in the charity sector for more than 25 years.
Right.
I've been working these as my profession
right.
for over 25 years.
Right.
And I really are thinking is we can no longer look at all issue in isolation.
Okay.
So animal welfare or animal rights issue, it is a big problem in that part of
right.
the world. But not because people are cruel
mm-hmm.
or they are not more cruel than people here.
Yes.
You still get lots of cruelty issues
everywhere.
In the West.
Right.
But I do think we are more ignorant
uh-huh.
about animals' needs.
Right.
Their basic cares.
Right.
And they go back to the, you know, history, and if you look at how the society development is, we just don't see animals have same status as people here.
Right.
You know,
the status of animals here, boy, is like they have a pushchair.
Yes, yes. You know, they
have a pushchair. They have like little beds. They
yeah.
have like really great food, gourmet food.
Yes.
You know, I have a friend of mine who she actually bakes her dog's cookies. You know, she doesn't have children, but she makes her dog's cookies, and you know, he has his own room, and I mean, she really loves this dog.
But I think the love to this dog is more than just a dog. The dog is a companion.
Yes,
that the dog is a part of family yes. member. You know, almost like your own
child.
Children.
Yeah, yeah, well, she calls it her boy. Her
exactly.
Boy.
So yeah. I think that is very different. Relationships, the human-animal right. relationship from this point is very different.
Right.
If you compare to the, you know, East, when I grew up, animal is just there. You right. know, you're not
you live
sure.
in the backyard.
That, you know, you live in the backyard or they're just there for people to be used,
right.
to be eaten. So
right.
the relationship is very different. Even to date, I spent most of last 13 years since I set up Act Asia is try to redefine the definition of animals.
Right.
We talk about, you know, to people, to media, to the school authority is saying animals are not just objects.
Right.
They're not moving objects. They actually
right.
are sentient beings.
Right.
They
right.
have a feelings, you know, they have emotions, they have a compassion as
right.
well. So
they do.
Yeah, so I do think that is something we are not familiar with.
Right.
That's not how we've been taught
right.
when we
it's not
were
the culture.
Little. I think part of it's not the modern culture, but we do have a culture of like yin and yang, the Taoism,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is there, but I think it's missing in the modern
in
days
practice.
Of the
okay.
life or the way you actually treating that animal. Do you really treat it as your family member? Do you have that companion animal shapes?
Right.
Instead of just they are there for us to service us
right.
in the sense.
Well,
it's very different.
You know what? We're going to take a break and we'll come back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So we're back on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, and I'm with Pei Su. I have to do the head so I get it right. Right, Pei Su, who is the founder and CEO of Act Asia.
Yeah.
And we're talking about animals being sentient beings, animals having compassion, you know, and having all the feelings that we have in their own dog way.
Yeah.
And the different cultures. I was sharing with her about being of West Indian background. We did not have a dog in the house. And most of the people that I knew growing up who were West Indian did not have a dog in the house. The dog stayed in the backyard. And in the Caribbean or in Jamaica, I didn't see anybody taking any dogs for walks. Not to say they're not there, right? But it's not a common practice.
I think there's a very different
it wasn't
practice.
A common, yes.
You know, it's a different practice. You keep, how you keep animals, especially for dogs and cats, you know, across, you know, the globe. Like you said, you know, in Caribbean or even in Sri Lanka, in Thailand, lots of these dogs, they are community dogs.
Right.
They look after. But I think is not only the how you keep them, is how you view them, how right. you see them. You know, for us, when we grow up, even today, for lots of Chinese people, they are animals there, they are thing. They are right. a thing.
Right.
You know, they don't even recognize this animal can feel frightened. They have a feeling. They, if it's cold, they feel the coldness right. as right. well.
It just probably doesn't register and compute.
We just never been told.
Right.
We haven't been reminded. It's not something. So then it become a problem is
right.
because you're not aware of this animal, they are sentient.
Right.
So I always remember when I started, you know, the organization, when we have education program, we have test run class, we have invited the kindergarten kids to come in, and this boy was about 5, and I say to him, do you like a dog? And he said, I do, but my mother told me dog is very dirty
mm-hmm.
and it's very dangerous, they can mm-hmm. bite me anytime, so never ever touch a dog. That dog, if the dog, you know, bite me, I would get rabies.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
he would think, wow, this is a 5-year-old child.
Mm-hmm. He's always got a story about it.
Everything about this dog is always negative, negative,
right.
negative.
And he really probably wanted a dog.
Exactly. And so we found is the kids actually were born be very empathetic, compassionate, and they like animals because mm. they feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the scientific study show is actually animals are medium for kids to learn to love nature.
Okay.
So that the animals, you know, allow them to get in touch and to kind of link
right.
with the nature. So if the kids grow up to feel everything so negative about the animals, how is she going to have, you know,
right.
this child to have a positive relationship or view that, you know, our society and our world is consists of human animals and nature.
Right.
So I think that's the problem we are facing.
I don't want to belabor the conversation about the animals and stuff like that, because it's great. And you know, it's a conversation about animals. We can go on forever,
yes.
right? Because it's just one of those things.
Yes.
But one of the areas that you focused on is illegal trading.
Yes.
What
yes.
was, I mean, you know, you doing that must have been very risky.
I mean, when I, like 20 years ago, I started do lots of undercover investigations.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've been to the bear farm. I've been to the
bear farms. Yes.
yes.
I did not know there was such a thing.
Yeah, the bear bio farms. These bear were kept in a cage for mm-hmm. lives just
to
extract their, no, for extracting their bio. For, you know, the Jews, bear bio, the
uh-huh.
Jews to make a Chinese medicine.
Okay, okay.
So these are the animal, this huge bear, they cannot move, they
right.
live in a cage. So I see these, I see, you know, I investigate the illegal wildlife trade on rhino horn,
right.
elephants, ivory, you know. So I see all these issues, but I found really is, again, people are buying the products,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but they not really understand where that products come from.
Right. Or
actually is not only powder,
right.
it's a rhino horn.
Right.
It's actually from that wildlife endangered species.
Right. Right.
So people can't click in the sense. You know, when we say consumer, when you buy something, there is a consequence.
Right.
Nowadays, it's very common. We just keep buying. We just keep consuming. We are not aware what we are doing actually
right.
is causing detrimental
so
effect in our nature.
Powdered rhino horn for? Or what do they say they use it for?
In the old traditional medicine, is saying is for very effective for meningitis.
Okay.
It's very effective for reduce the high fever.
Right.
So if you have high temperature, you cannot reduce it. Instead of, you know, inject lots of antibiotics, you know, to kill the bacteria. But now with all the technology, you know, the modern medical history, I don't really think, I think a lot of TCM, the traditional Chinese doctor, they also disagree with the practice.
Right.
However, the black market is still there.
Right.
that when there is a demand, there is always someone will want to supply
right.
that product. Right. So I think for me is to educate the consumers.
And what is it like for you to educate the consumers? Because I'm imagining you have to start from ABC.
Yes, that's why in our program in Agda Asia, we focus on three different target audiences. Uh-huh. The first one is children, uh-huh. you know, because they grow up, you know, they want them to
yes.
make sure their empathy, compassion is still maintained.
Uh-huh.
They're not losing that. So their empathy towards animal can be kept. That's uh-huh. one thing. The second thing is for the second target audience is for professionals. For example, we found, you know, we talked to the lawyers or we train vets and we train, for example, fashion designer to tell them use sustainable materials.
Right.
Don't use fur,
right.
you know, because fur is immensely cruel.
Right.
It's not really essential at the modern days
right.
because is causing a lot of environmental damage.
Right.
You know, animals are suffering. You have to use very heavy chemical to tanning the
right.
fur to keep the fur not be rotten.
Right, right.
So it's not more sustainable products. So
right.
again, if you have to buy certain things, I think we are now all think about what that action, what that buying certain thing, what that action will cost to
mm-hmm.
our environment.
Mm-hmm.
So now people are starting to think more, less plastic, you know, more sustainable, recyclable material,
right.
et cetera.
Right.
So that's a consumer. Then, you know, then we talk to the consumers. So we encourage the consumer to think about, can you live in a way is compassionate lifestyle?
Right.
You know, your lifestyle can be changed.
Right.
Your lifestyle can be sustainable way to help. So what really, one thing I think what Agda Asia and myself is really want to urge is we can no longer target an issue on its own in isolation.
Right.
You know, I think the World Health Organization in World Health, you know, WHO, they, you know, as an organization,
right.
they promote one welfare in the past.
Right. That's like you said the World Health Organization. I said who? And you said no, the World
Yes, like, we said who?
Who's on first?
That's true. You keep saying who. Yes. So really I think is now people are not talking about one welfare anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know, or one health. We are now talking about one care. You know, the care has to be across the board.
Right.
You know, the care need to be addressed to different parts of society,
mm-hmm.
to different agents
mm-hmm.
altogether.
So who do you work with in terms of, who are your partners?
We work closely with schools.
Mm-hmm.
We educate, you know, children by, you know, we develop our curriculum
mm-hmm.
in China. We bring the curriculum, we talk to the authority, we using, you know, the school time
right.
for the kids to learn our curriculum.
Right.
So the curriculum is called Caring for Life.
Right.
Is teaching,
Caring for Life?
Yes, it's called Caring for Life Education. We target the children from primary school, from grade 1 to grade 6.
Right.
And that's age 6 to 12,
right.
for them to learn how to be responsible, what is your responsibility to be a good global citizenship.
Yeah.
So
China is becoming extremely rich. They have, I think, some of probably more, they're developing billionaires frequently, right? Faster than any other country. How is this education that you're serving, how is it targeting the children, but what's the response of the parents in this arena?
We started in the program in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Before we started, we did 2 years of research
okay.
as well. We think that what the best way to go forward, and we decided is the best way is talking to the school education authority.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't go to school because one sympathetic teacher.
Right.
That's not good enough.
Right.
We feel it's very important we get school authority on board, that no one understand the importance of the issue. And also they also agree when kids learning in school is no longer just how clever they are
mm-hmm.
in terms of academic
mm-hmm.
you know, result. They should start to learn how to be a responsible person.
Right.
They care, they take responsibility,
right.
they respect our, you know, elderly, there's respect of the teacher, there's
right.
respect of, you know, our nature and animals as well. So
2012,
they,
13, 14, 15, 16,
so
17, 18, 19. So you're 7 years old.
For our school education.
Yes.
We established in 2006. So we've
right.
been, you know, established and running for 13 years. But
right.
we have done school education specifically for last 7 years.
Right. So in 7 years, so you're, when you went in at seven, now your kids today are 14. Right? The first set of kids that you worked with, would
yes.
you say?
Yes.
Right? So what has been the outcome? What do you see as an outcome?
We have school. We have the specific evaluation. We mm-hmm. work with City University of
mm-hmm.
New York, Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Williamson Mills,
mm-hmm.
and he is an independent researcher. He did the evaluation of our course.
Mm-hmm.
And for the 3 years study between 2013 to 16, it has showed the kids actually become more compassionate. They become
right.
kinder.
Right.
So when we talk about 6 and 7 years old kids, what do you mean they become kinder? They mean they're less hitting in school. They
right.
become less disruptive. They become
right.
more, you know, easier to manage in the class.
Right.
They become, you know, less quarrel, less
right.
argument with
right.
their friends. So that is all their behavior change. They also have a student, they start to say, you know what, I don't really want to eat wildlife.
Right.
You know, I don't really want this, you know, turtle to kill for me
right.
to,
right.
to
right.
eat
right.
as a food.
Right.
So again, we are teaching kids to say, you make that choice. We're not there to tell you what you do,
right.
what you should do and shouldn't do,
right.
is them to think about, I don't want to do it. So we are building that resilience when they are older.
So
they can say to no,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to take drug.
Right.
Not because all my family, because my parents say so, or school say so, it's because I don't want to do it.
Right.
Yes. And
we're
I think that's very important.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
And we're back on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, and we're with Pei Su. That's the only way I'm going to do it, right? It's like music. So you mentioned, and I love the fact that, you know, you're educating the children, which will educate the parents, which will have them grow up to be, you know, good civic citizens. And because I, when you say that, I think about in New York, we used to have this ad campaign for smoking. And it would be this guy who had his voice box removed, and he would speak like that. and he couldn't swim, and they had all these, and then they had the woman with the hands and the feet and the fingers cut off. And I remember my neighbor's children, they'd be like this, Noreen, we're not allowed to smoke cigarettes, because this, you know, they would mimic it, right? And so I remember kids saying that they're not going to smoke cigarettes because it's bad for you. They don't want to end up with a voice box, their voice box. They want to be able to continue to swim and all these kinds of stuff. Yeah. And funny enough, I met some kids who were like 15 or 16 who remember those commercials and don't smoke.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I guess it does. When you start early, it makes a difference. And also a lot of those children who had parents that smoked would say, Mommy, please don't smoke. We don't want you to die. Yes, we don't want you to end up looking like that person, you know?
Yes.
So that's really good. But I remember, you know, in the conversation just now, you said, you mentioned that you had to go undercover.
Yeah.
So where did you go undercover? Because this is a big deal. I'm thinking like not for profit, you know, you're getting grants, you're doing programs, but never undercover. Talk to me about that.
I think that was probably my more early stage of working for the nonprofit.
Right.
You know, and you start to really want to expose, you know, the injustice of the issues. And it sometimes it doesn't have to be disguised. It's not that kind of dramatic, like, Double Seven sort of the situation. It's really coming to really just...
Pay bond.
just talking to these people. So what are you doing? What are you selling?
Right.
You know, what's going on with these?
What was that? What was the risk that you were taking when you were doing... That's really what I want to know. What were the risks that you were taking when you were doing that kind of stuff?
I mean... The risk is always there because it's like a reporter, you know, if you do something, you know, you expose the illegal or injustice of the issue. So the risk is always there. And also as a young woman as well, you know, don't think about 20 years ago, you know, I was still, you know, in
young
a way.
It's
exactly. And
eager.
So it's always a risk as a woman, you know, you go in to do these things. But I think... My motivation is I'm doing the better good. You know, we really are trying to not to saying, you know, to get these people out of job. It's really trying to show this is not the way.
There's another way.
You know, to do things. Even today, we wrote a report about the fur industry. You know, we do report about, you know, how toxic the fur could be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you wear, you know, fur, what either cause skin irritation or even cause possibly that the some of the chemical could cause, you know, infertilities or even cause cancer. So this is
something. I did not know that.
Yeah, this is something people not aware. So I feel is then when you do these things, you have to think about consequences as well.
Well, when you said that, what came to mind for me was the people that work in these factories that are, you know, making
extremely
these...
Extremely dangerous.
Yes.
So there is a German documentary 2 years ago. It's called The Truth Behind Fur. The documentary actually went into the fur factory. They were doing tanning. Mm-hmm. So the tanning is making, like I said, because it's... real material. If you want to keep it for longer, you're not in a freezer, you have to tanning it to make it, you know, not rotten.
Preserve.
So the worker there, he is actually caught in the film. The worker there was really hot in summer, so there was big tanning tank,
mm-hmm.
and it's full of chemical mm-hmm. water inside. And he actually finished work, so he needed a shower. So what he did is he just scooped the water and showered himself using the tanning water.
Oh, God.
And
so he's completely ignorant to the facts of what's going on.
Yes, because nobody had told him there is a safety issue. And in the factory, the chemicals everywhere, the powder, it never passes health and safety here.
Right.
But they just don't understand, you know, is anyone particularly cruel? He's doing that to himself. He actually was showering. I still have that
memory.
Image in my head all the time. So who is suffering? Everyone is suffering.
Right.
Not only the animal is suffering. It's people work in that plant, you know, in that
manufacturer.
It's a
trickle down or trickle up.
Yes. So that's why I say connectivity interlink.
Right.
We cannot get out this problem if we're not breaking the link.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. There was something else that you said about, I want to talk about the children left behind.
Yes.
Tell me about that. Because you do a lot of areas.
Yes.
There's a lot of areas that you focus on. Do you have a big staff?
No, we are actually very resourceful. We are very frugal. You know, I was talking to one of the foundation today.
Right.
And when I told them about budget, they say, really? To such a small amount of money, you can reach 10,000 kids per year?
Right.
I used to say, yes.
You're operating with a small budget. If you had, you know, if I could wave a magic wand, which I do have a wand, but I didn't bring it. what is a budget that you would like to work on or that could have you do a lot more?
Yes, we say
work.
To people, we for our education course, every child will be $15 a year. That will allow them to learn 10 lessons. So if you think about $15 a child divided 10 lessons, so it's
$15?
$15, yes, for one child for 10 lessons. So every child.
For the year?
Yes, yes. So every child.
Hang on, wait, let me recap. Which country?
China.
Oh,
yes.
Jesus.
So every child is $15 a year and they can learn 10 lessons.
Uh-huh.
So each of lesson only costs $1.50. So it's not a lot of money, but this will enable a child to learn compassion and empathy, to learn what is the meaning of, you know, animals, they are sentient.
Right.
So it's not a lot, but we do need that public support.
Right. How do you get your funding?
We rely on public donation. We rely on the foundation,
uh-huh,
the grant to help us. So we are quite incredible in
right.
a sense. So that's why we have won several awards this year and in last, you know, since, you know, four, five, 6 years ago.
Right.
This year I won a war. In January, I won an award in China called Charity Leadership,
mm-hmm,
was given by Shanghai Media Group.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just told Monday on the way to here, I was told I just won the China Charity Figures in China Charity Festival.
Oh, so
yes.
So basically your hard work for all these years is
yes.
actually bearing fruit now.
Yes, I think it's more people we recognize our work. However, Act Asia still very under resources. We don't have, you know, professional fundraiser for
uh-huh.
us, so we rely on people to give us donations. So I hope people can go to check actasia.org
right.
and to, you know, donate to us monthly, you know, and we rely on these. You know, if someone give us $15
right.
a month,
that can,
you know,
take care
and
of
then
one child.
If you exactly so a year,
no,
you
that
can
take care of 12 children for the year.
Yes. That's exactly what was going on. So if you $15 a month for 12 months, you can look after 12 children to learn 10 lessons in
so
a year.
So is in China, is the school system not under the Chinese government or is it private?
No, it's we all run in the state school,
uh-huh.
you know, but we need
but
to
you
train.
Need to, yes.
We need to train the teachers.
Right.
We need to train, you know, the people can teach the lesson.
Right.
We print in our curriculum. You know, we give it file free for them to be able to use our resource material.
Right.
We go to rural part of China.
Oh, yeah.
We teach, you know.
What is that like, going to the rural part? Is it, where is the most pain point?
I think. Caring for Life Education is, you know, a curriculum based on the UNESCO, you know, the principle of what is the purpose of education. The
right.
purpose of education is allow kids to learn the world, to learn the world, to sense the world, that participate in the world.
Right.
So we believe doesn't matter the kids is from affluent family
right.
or from disadvantaged family.
Right.
They all need to learn to be care. You
right.
know, to learn to be compassionate children.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't matter who they are, where they come from. They should learn to have emotional intelligence.
Right.
You know,
so
and they behind children in the rural part of China. These are the children, they haven't been able to have time with their parents
right.
because their parents live in the big city,
yes, I've
you know,
that.
Have the job,
right.
and so lots of these kids are left on their own or with their
grandparents
or relatives.
Right.
You know, don't get me wrong, the Chinese government do try really hard to address the issue, and there are lots of different charities try to address the left behind children's their, you know, learning and education. However, I think across, you know, the nation, we need to really refocus what is the purpose of education.
Right.
You know, I always,
what is the purpose of it?
You know, yeah. The purpose is I go to give to the parents lots of talk. You know, I call parent power.
Right.
I encourage the parents to say, you actually have a responsibility to teach your children.
Right.
And that teaching is not about how good they are in math,
right,
or how good they are in writing the composition,
right,
or you know, to be able to speak good English. The teaching is how to be a good human being.
Right.
Take that responsibility.
Right.
So I hope these kids, when they grow up, they will say, we don't want to eat shark fin.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be buying ivory tray, you mm-hmm. know, ivory mm-hmm. task. We don't want to, you know,
they will have
fur.
More compassion for
so
animals
they,
and things.
They, not only, and then also they can say, we want to do something for climate change.
Right.
I think climate change is, everybody is talking about it, is aware of it, but how do we do it?
How is climate change affecting, because I, you know, I've never been to China. It's on my list, right? And a friend of mine went to China and she says, when you go to China as a black person, you have to be people that want to touch you. Make sure, she goes, people were coming up to her and because they went into some rural places as well, and those people were touching her and going like that. So I thought it was, I think it's funny, right? I mean, you know, but how is China doing in terms of their own cases of climate change?
I think, you know, the climate change is a global issue,
right?
And I think nobody would disagree with that. Say we, apart from, you know, the serpent people in
yes,
this country,
which
think that's
to be nameless.
And I think it's something, is almost like a concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find, you know, when people talk to me about, we talk about sustainable fashion,
right,
and I have tried to make sure all these big, you know, words, there is not a
simplified
jargon.
Yes.
They are not just a concept.
Right.
They are not philosophy.
Right.
You know, they are something they can be implement.
Right.
They are something people in their daily life, you can do something for climate change. For
right.
example, taking the public transport, you know, you do, you know, take less, you know, a car in a way, and if you can take a train.
Right.
You know, so I think people in their daily life with something they can take action. And I have said to, you know, a lot of corporate in China as well, when we're saying climate change or sustainable fashion, all this is not just a trend.
No.
It's not marketing jargon. It's something you do have to believe in.
Yeah.
And then try to see in your company's practice, what do you want to change?
Right.
How do you make that difference? And I think that's very important for every leader or every, you know, business, you know, leader. They start to think, how are we going to make difference? If
right.
everybody starts to think about that, I think we will make some change in action. Sometimes we just not paying enough attention.
Right.
We just don't think about it.
Right.
You know, sometimes, you know, I always laugh about people will think, you know, if you go to office, if you have the big ballroom where everybody goes meeting, if you have 20 bottles of Avian water, they will think, wow, that is really posh.
Right.
That's really kind of like great thing. But actually now, nobody should do that because
right.
that is just so environment friendly.
The plastic.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think
and also the plastic leaches into, I don't drink bottled water
yes.
unless I have to.
Exactly.
You know, but it leaches into the water.
But I think it's that kind of thing is, we used to just go to the shop, buying a bottle of water.
Right.
Now we know microplastic.
Right.
We know plastic is damaging our environment,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera. But now we need to really make sure when the kids grow up, they were saying, no, we don't want that. I want to take my water bottle. I
right.
want to make sure this is something we don't want to do it.
Right.
You know, I think it's very simple, but I think people
Yeah, just want a convenience.
Yeah, well, then convenience we forget kills, about right?
It. Yeah.
But you mentioned that there is no, you know, there's no one, a quick fix.
Yes.
Right? There's no quick fix.
Okay. Yes.
Oh. So yes. Are we at the end?
No.
Oh. Okay. So do we need to take a break? Okay. We need to take a break. So we'll be right back.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And we're back on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, and I'm with Pei Su. So, you know, we were taking a break, and you talked about your curriculum, and we talked about sustainability. We've talked about, like, all the areas that you've got all the hot button issues.
Yes.
All of them, right? But what I'm sensing from your, and what you're saying is that with education, we can literally transform the way that we've been living.
Yes, I think we are facing lots of challenge in today's society. We have a problem really from youth, you know, that modern youth have a mental issues, you have eating disorder, suicide, self-harm, we have environment issue, our planet is burning, it's getting cold, you know, flooding, we have animal issue, you know, all this wildlife is ding. So we are having so many burning issues. I spent first my 20 years on my non-profit, you know, career to try to fix different issues.
Mm-hmm.
When I was, you know, 5 years ago, when I would think about, okay, I've done 20 years, and I look at my age, I say, if I'm going to work another 20 years in this moment, what am I going to do? And I tell myself, I don't want firefighting. I don't want just fix the leak.
Right.
I just want to have...
Band-aided.
Yeah, band-aided. I want to be able to change within the institution. I want to make that long-term change.
Right.
And through education. And education... It's no quick fix.
Right.
Education is a fix for long term.
It's one brick in the wall at a time.
Exactly. And
right.
And I do think that's where we're facing the challenge is because it's not very sexy. It's not about something very, you know, immediate result. Say, okay, how many kids can change the world tomorrow? No. You know, but they will change the world.
But
the
next
generation
will
be
young,
different.
What's that young the young lady with the blonde hair, she has Asperger's,
Greta.
And she said that's
Greta.
Her secret weapon.
Yeah. In Sweden.
Yes. So we want more Gretas.
Yes. Yes. And that is something I feel the time will come in China. There will be more kids. They will want to do something to say, no, this is what we want to change. But we need to sow that seeds from now. I always say to people, we are cultivated the ground. We cultivated the ground. We make the seeds to be able to grow. Because if the ground is like a concrete, nothing will grow.
No.
You know, they will just die.
But you have to break the concrete.
Yes. But a break concrete is get into the school.
Right.
And break concrete is be able to talk to the right people, the right company, the right consumers.
Right.
They want to make that change.
Right. And from the children, from like they say, out of the mouth of babes, right?
Yeah.
From the children, it goes to the parents. From the parents,
yes.
It goes to the grandparents,
yes.
And so on and so forth.
Yes.
And
yes.
The children will teach their brothers and sisters. So basically, the children will teach the children.
The children will grow up to not in a vicious cycle to think they're entitled to use our planet and our nature. The kids will not feel they're entitled to use animal whenever they want.
Right.
The kids will make that change. They will want to make something different.
So do you think that... So basically, what I'm hearing from you is that bringing all the woes to the children and educating them about them will make that difference. Because the children see domestic violence. They see domestic violence. They might not be able to understand it fully, but they know somebody's being hurt. So if that got brought to schools, maybe that could...
Yes, that would be like a prevention.
Right.
You know, we always have job. Say we don't want to get flu.
Right.
Or we don't want to get, disease or hepatitis.
Right.
So you will have a prevention. So we are trying to prevention at early stage.
Right.
Make them to be good. Allow them to learn what does good mean.
Step into their nature.
Exactly. So
because then kids are not naturally
cruel.
Right.
Kids are actually very compassionate, very empathetic. So we are not trying to make the kids not lost,
right.
Not lose that sort of nature ability,
right.
In a sense. And also, I think it's very important to address, we are not just putting all the pressure on the children.
Right.
Because
no.
There's some saying to say, well, all the grow up doing a bad thing, but you tell us kids don't do certain
right.
things. I think it's not like that angle. It's really try to really maintain what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And when these kids grow up, when they change, when they become their profession, when they have their own children, we are not in vicious circle.
Right.
So otherwise, that 5 years old child, like I said, he's received everything so negative about animals.
Right.
So when he grow up, he will tell his kids
the same thing yeah.
Because that's what he was told. And the kids are like a blank canvas. They absorb so much mm-hmm. from the grow up
well,
as a role model to do.
The adage is they don't do what we tell them to do. They do what they see us doing.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if mommy and daddy eating, shark fin, that's adult food.
Yes.
Then we want to strive to eat that
yes.
as well.
Yes.
But if you tell them in school that sharks have experienced, sharks have been going to be extinct.
I think first of the thing is that, in the same shark fin, we don't go to school and say don't eat
shark
fin.
No.
We are there to say, do you know sharks? Where does shark live?
Yes.
Sharks actually are wildlife.
Yes.
They live in habitat.
Right.
And sharks could feel pain.
Right. And they have families.
They have families.
They have communities.
Exactly.
Right.
So you are teaching them then when they make that connection. So for example, China has a lot of circus. These circus,
laws of what?
Circus. Animals perform
yes.
in the zoo as a circus.
Right.
And they do horrendous things. The bear will ride a bicycle, the monkey will, do all sorts of tricks, the goats will ride a bike from like 5 meters high, in that sort of things. The kids, they will grow up to say, well, that's what animals do anyway. They are so clever they can do that. But they forgot that actually don't do that. They were trying to do it. Then we were told the kids say, do you want to do it? Will you feel scared? So the kids can grow up to say, I don't want to see circus.
Right.
Not because we say don't. It's they have that empathy towards the animals.
So we've got 2 minutes. How can people find you? How can people donate to you?
So people can go to our website. It's www.actasia. It's actasia.org. actasia.org. And there is a donate button on our website. You can click through, and to donate to us through PayPal. And we ask for $15 to allow a child to get 10 lessons a year.
In the curriculum.
Yes. So if you do the monthly donation, that will be 12 children to be able to learn.
Right.
And so I hope we can get support. And also I think is, support our vision, to help the kids learn the importance of nature and animals
right.
and, human welfare altogether.
Right. Human welfare.
Yes.
Behaviors.
Exactly. So it's human, animals, and nature all interconnected.
Right.
So we are trying to address this holistically in a very comprehensive way instead of, you know, isolation, you know, look at things in isolation.
Right. So I just want to thank you so much for coming all this way and coming on the show.
Yes.
I really appreciate it. This was a very interesting subject, and it's a very necessary topic because if the animals go, we go too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you ever so much to have me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. My pleasure.
You.
So this is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential. Live life your way. Signing off. Until next week. Bye.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.